Across the country, as the pandemic reaches its two-year mark, restrictions and mandates are loosening. There's talk about living with COVID-19, whatever variants are to come, much like that of the flu. We've seen vaccines and treatments emerge, and we've seen a rise in survival rates in the general population, along the idea that we're moving from that of a pandemic phase to that of an endemic stage. On the next two episodes, we'll discuss what this means to you and your patients. Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal for Operations and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Internist. Joining in the podcast are my returning guests, Dr. Matty McDowell, Senior Principal for Intelligence at Vizient, and Dr. Marty Lucenti, Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Solution Architecture at Vizient. Matty, Marty, welcome back. So let's jump right to it. Let's define pandemic versus endemic. What do you guys think is the difference?
With endemic, we are talking about stable and predictable rates of infection. So both stable and predictable. Think of the flu. It's predictable every winter. The reason it's predictable is we do have some public health measures like vaccines that really help us. When we think about endemic, though, it does not mean less deadly or less severe. And that's an important point to mention, as well as that for some endemic infections, public health measures are still warranted.
I get that, but is it a flip of the switch, Marty? I mean, is it kind of come then into President Biden's just going to say we're in an endemic state?
Yeah, I think there's two components to it, you know, when you start to look at it. One is, are you at a level that has resource ramifications or has capacity issues in your healthcare provision system, number one. Then I think that the other thing that influences where that level, because what we are talking about is where is that a magic level? What is the magic prevalence of a disease that separates it from endemic, from pandemic? And there is no hard and fast number there. Mm-hmm. Number one, it's a little bit about at what level does it start to overwhelm some of your healthcare provisional resources, which we have seen throughout this pandemic. Many of these surges have led to real shortages in acute care capacity. And then I think the other one is the risk tolerance or is a comfort with the risk level. And what you see is that can drift up high. You know, they can start to get drift. If you look, the original response after the pandemic, there was a real big fear response. People weren't coming to the emergency room with heart attacks, strokes, all of those things because they were afraid they were going to get COVID by coming to the emergency room. That waned very quickly over a couple months. And what you've seen is our population has gotten much, much more comfortable with the level of risk that a certain pathogen creates in their lives. And so it's that combination of, do I have enough risk? Do I have enough resources to deal with it? And where is my risk tolerance as a society? Our risk tolerance has been drifting up. We have been more and more progressively challenged on the acute care capacity side.
But the risk tolerance has drifted up because of immunity. So yep. Vaccine immunity and natural immunity, temporary natural immunity, is the balancing impact on the R-naught of the virus. And that's what leads to that endemic state.
I think that also to keep in mind is that Matty brought up the natural immunity, and I think that we need to be very clear that whether even vaccinated or you get natural immunity, immunity tends to wax and wane for this particular virus.
This is a very unique infection. The natural immunity wanes after 3 months. The vaccine immunity seems to wane after 5 to 6 months, depending on which vaccine you have. The boosters have really made a huge difference in the Omicron, where we're seeing very high-risk people who are boosted do very well if they get COVID. But what this tells us is that SARS-CoV-2 is not going away and herd immunity is not the answer. We are going to continue to live with this. We're not going to eradicate it. And when we think of other viruses that are endemic, we have to remember that some of them are pretty deadly in local geographies, like malaria kills 600,000 a year and TB kills about 1.5 million a year. So a lot of misconception around the fact that once this gets endemic, it becomes a less deadly virus. And that is not the case.
Couldn't agree with you more. But Marty, do you also feel that COVID is here to stay?
What you're seeing is a migration towards this being another one of those common cold viruses with time. That's the path. I would assume, actually, some of the common cold viruses that we currently deal with had a phase similar to this back in history. And so I think we will have some variant of this virus with us for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm.
So when this whole pandemic started, we were trying to make it efforts to actually eradicate the virus. Are we saying now that, frankly, COVID isn't going to be eradicated?
What I have heard from leading scientists is it cannot be eradicated because the transmission rate is just so high. Mm-hmm. So think of it like other coronaviruses. We haven't been able to completely eradicate it because the transmission is just so high that it can always find a susceptible person somewhere. So it's just a different type of infection than, say, smallpox, which with a huge vaccination effort, we could eradicate. It doesn't mean, though, that we can't live with it. And I think that's one of the most important messages is we have vaccines, we have medications, we have really good testing. So this is not 2020. We are living in a very different time with this infection. It doesn't mean, though, that public health measures are going away completely. They're still in our tool chest to help us with this, just like we would use public health measures for the measles or flu.
So we've talked about tolerance to the vaccine and thinking of this as our new normal. What does the data tell us about how the country feels? What does the data tell us about getting to an endemic state?
Well, it's interesting. People say you don't know you're in an endemic state until far into the future when you look back. Mm-hmm. When you look back, you'll say, okay, this is when we hit the endemic state.
Right.
So we're transitioning there. Like you said, it's not a flip of a switch. And we are transitioning there. It's becoming more stable. But we just had the Omicron, which was very unpredictable. And I think one thing that's here to stay is uncertainty. SARS-CoV-2 is not going away. It will mutate. There will be variants. We don't quite understand what variants are coming and what their impact will be. One thing we have to realize is organizations and people who are willing to be able to be more nimble, to be able to say, okay, we're going to flex up at this time, we're in a nice stable period now, are going to do much better than trying to plan a year, 2 years in ahead. However, we do think with the medications, with the vaccines, we're going to see less and less surges over time. We're going to see hospitalizations, though, for COVID. They're going to be average daily census. They're going to be in your beds over the year, over the next year, over the next 5 years, but it'll be lower and lower numbers. There may be some mini surges, and that's where understanding uncertainty and being able to be nimble is going to be really important.
I think that brings up a very good part, Marty, in reference to about the importance of being nimble. You know, I think absolutes moving forward just doesn't make sense. What's your opinion there?
Maddie's points are really sound. What you hope from this, you know, if you look at the public health system in the U.S., it really was the byproduct of the Spanish flu, right?
Yes.
Most of the policies, procedures, approach in the institution were the byproduct of that. What you hope is that COVID is the originator of the next generation of enhanced public health endeavors. But with a big improvement on biosurveillance, we have been looking for more intricate biosurveillance strategies. I think we're going to see real advancements in biosurveillance, wastewater testing, all of those things to pick up things earlier. And then I think we're going to see the combination, as Maddie said, we're going to get more and more understanding about the regularity, frequency, and timing of vaccinations. We're going to get more and more insightful on the different components of the immune system, IgG, IgM, IgA, and understanding why respiratory viruses tend to be more difficult to eradicate. We're about to enter a phase where we get some renewed advancement on the public health front and synergies with our healthcare providers. I've not seen as much advancement in the collaborative work of our state, federal, local public health officials and our healthcare providers. So I think that constructs are going to start to give us the infrastructure to be more agile. I would tell you, we struggled during this. We had problems with testing. We had problems with contact tracing. We had problems with defining the appropriate criteria for ICE. We really struggled with some of the basics with this pandemic. I think what we're getting on the come down is a reprieve. What I hope is that that's an opportunity to become a lot more strategic in our biosurveillance, in our early identification of emerging surges, viral strands, all of those things.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Maddie McDowell and Marty Lucenti for joining us, and they will return for the next episode to continue our discussion. If you'd like to contact them, we'll put their email address on the resource section of our podcast page. And if you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send us your comments, please contact me at our email, modernpracticepodcast.com. We posted a link in our resource section. And please join us for other Modern Practice Podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks so much for listening.